Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, August 15th, 2016. We continue now with the death notices, beginning with the funerals today section. Delmar Lee Burge Sr., 85, of Howell, Michigan, formerly of Decatur, services at 11 a.m. in Grace Lutheran Church, Howell, Michigan. Deborah K. Goodman, 59, of Decatur, services at 11 a.m. in Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Charles Harris, 75, of Decatur, services at 11 a.m. in Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Joan Elizabeth Kenny, 80, of Decatur, at 1 p.m. in Grace United Methodist Church. Tanya A. Stiverson, 36, of Bement, services at 11 a.m. in Crossroads Church, Bement. Russell Glenn Wiley, 91, of Sullivan, services at 11 a.m. in McMullen Young Funeral Home, Sullivan. Beverly Williams, 65, of Decatur, services at 10 a.m. in Graceland Cemetery. And the list of funerals pending: Diana L. Darnell, 65, of Shelbyville, who died Saturday, August 14, 2016. Arrangements by Lockhart Green Funeral Homes in Shelbyville. Alice E. Lawyer, 63, of Arthur, formerly of Lovington, died Saturday, August 13. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Donna Mays, 58, of Decatur, died Saturday, August 13, 2016. Arrangements by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Sean Harrison Shamhart, 28, of Newton, died Thursday, August 11, 2016. Meyer Funeral Home in Newton will handle arrangements. Vera L. Stewardson, 91, of Shelbyville, died Saturday, August 13, 2016. Arrangements by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville. And the funerals include Fred August Clausen III. Fred August Clausen III, 78, of Forsyth, Illinois, passed away peacefully in the presence of his family at 11:44 a.m. on Saturday, August 13, 2016, in St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. A public visitation to celebrate Fred's life will be held Wednesday, August 17, 2016, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon, Illinois. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to Lincoln Trails Boy Scout Council. Mary Lou Jenner Ferriel. Mary Lou Jenner Ferriel, 89, of Decatur, passed away at 7:15 a.m. Saturday, August 13, 2016, at Symphony of Decatur. Funeral services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Wednesday, August 17, 2016, at First United Methodist Church, Decatur, Illinois, with visitation on Tuesday, August 16, 2016, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Graveside services will be held at 3 o'clock p.m. at Sumner Cemetery, Sumner, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Decatur Municipal Band and First United Methodist Church. Betty Ann Graham. Betty Ann Graham of Punta Gorda, Florida, passed away Tuesday, June 21, 2016, at the age of 92. The family is requesting, in lieu of flowers, that memorials be made to the Mighty 8th Air Force Museum, P.O. Box 1992, Savannah, Georgia, 31402. Interment services to celebrate Betty and Charles will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Friday, August 19, 2016, in Star Hope Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois, 62526. Charles Harris, Decatur. Charles Harris, 75, of Decatur, passed away on Wednesday, August 10, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Homegoing services to celebrate Charles's life will be at 11 a.m. Monday, August 15, 2016, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. There will be no visitation prior to the services. Memorial donations may be made to the wishes of the family, care of Nancy Harris. Joan Elizabeth Kenny, Decatur. Joan Elizabeth Kenny, 80, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Tuesday, August 9, 2016, at her residence. Funeral services will be at 1 o'clock p.m. Monday, August 15, 2016, at Grace United Methodist Church, Decatur, with visitation from 5 to 8 p.m. on Sunday, August 14th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, and 1 hour prior to service time at the church on Monday. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to Scoville Park Zoo. Patricia Pat E. Hine Quintens of Decatur. Patricia Pat E. Hines Quintens of Decatur passed away Wednesday, August 10, 2016, at her home. She was 89. Mass of Christian burial to celebrate her life will be at 1 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, August 16, 2016, at St. James Catholic Church. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the Mass in the church. Burial will follow in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to Rock Springs Conservation Area, Macon County Conservation District, and the Decatur Audubon Society. Zach Robertson, Decatur. Zach Robertson, 91, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, August 11, 2016, in his home. Funeral services to celebrate Zach's life will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, August 16, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be Monday, August 15, 2016, from 5 to 7 p.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to American Heart Association. Deborah K. Goodman, Decatur. Deborah K. Goodman, 59, of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, August 10, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, August 15, at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church, Decatur, with visitation 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, August 14th. Memorials may be made to Multiple Sclerosis Society or Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. And from yesterday's paper, Nurse Examiners Critical in Sex Assault Cases, article by Huey Freeman, staff writer for the Herald and Review. This is from Decatur. When a sexual assault occurs, the victim is likely suffering the most traumatic experience of her life. Soon after the crime, her mind might be reeling as to whether to report it to police, especially if the offender is a relative or close acquaintance. With that in mind, sexual assault nurse examiners, SANE, try to comfort the victims while not adding any undue stress. They help collect evidence for possible prosecution, which must be done in a timely manner to be of any value, without forcing the victim to make a decision on her involvement in the criminal case at that time. The point of a SANE is to be the first person to help them get their power back, said Libby Capper, SANE coordinator, and one of the first nurses trained when the program was implemented 6 years ago. When a victim arrives at the emergency room of Decatur Memorial Hospital as the result of a sexual assault, she will be in contact with a nurse trained to meet her needs. In most cases, one of the five sane nurses is on duty. Otherwise, there is one on call who will arrive quickly. Two more nurses are about to begin training to bring the contingent up to 7 examiners. We are mandated reporters, so we have to call law enforcement, but the patients don't have to speak with law enforcement, Capper said. It is important for victims to allow the trained nurses to complete a forensic examination in a timely fashion, even if they are uncertain about their decision regarding prosecution. The sooner they are examined, the more likely that important evidence will be available for a possible arrest and conviction. It's best to collect evidence within 72 hours, Capper said, adding there are some cases in which viable physical evidence can be collected from a victim within 1 week. To ensure that the patient is in control of the use of the evidence, she must sign a form giving consent for the evidence to be released to law enforcement for processing. If the patient is uncertain, she is allowed to consider it for a short time. The evidence is so time-sensitive they have 2 weeks to decide whether to give the evidence to the police, Capper said. There are sexual assault cases, especially involving children, which are reported and successfully prosecuted months and even years after the incident, while relying on other evidence. But evidence gathered soon after the incident often determines the difference between a conviction or acquittal. When a victim enters the emergency room, the first priority is always the patient's medical needs. That puts pressure on the sane nurses to work quickly and efficiently in conjunction with doctors and other nurses who are treating the patient for physical injuries. About half of the victims who present themselves for treatment at DMH are children 12 and under and younger. When children arrive, the nurses call for help from the Decatur Police Department, Growing Strong Sexual Assault Center, and the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. Their medical needs are addressed, but they are referred to other hospitals where child sexual assault victims are examined, including Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana. At DMH, nurses only perform sexual assault examinations on victims 13 and older. On the children, we do an external exam to make sure there are no life-threatening injuries, Capper said. Sane examiners are trained in conducting forensic interviews with victims, in addition to their primary responsibility of conducting physical examinations. They receive instruction in various aspects of law enforcement, including investigations, trials, and crime laboratory procedures. We have to ask them questions leading to evidence to be found on their bodies, Capper said. The nurse examiners perform some of the examinations on women that are normally restricted to physicians. They also take photographs, which are obviously of a sensitive nature. We keep those very secure, Capper said. When a victim arrives, she is brought back to a private evaluation room after her injuries are diagnosed as non-life-threatening. About 90% of adult sexual assault victims seen at DMH are female. About 50 sexual assault victims are seen there each year. The examiners work closely with the physicians if there are medical problems, such as traumatic injuries suffered in connection with the assaults. Sane is concerned only with the sexual assault exam, said Capper, who works as an emergency room nurse in addition to performing her sane duties. The physician has to be seen for the injuries. If there's anything that's medical, we get them involved right away. When treating each victim, an examiner uses a sexual assault evidence collection kit, commonly known by its shorter name. In Illinois, they are assembled and distributed by the Illinois State Police. The kit, contained in a box roughly the size of a small postal priority shipping carton, has bags and instruments for collecting evidence as well as a consent release form and step-by-step instructions with check-off boxes. It contains a white debris sheet, a large drop cloth on which a patient undresses to collect debris such as leaves, grass clippings, dirt, anything that might corroborate her story on where the incident occurred. There are large bags for clothing, which may later provide DNA evidence when examined at a crime lab. We try to take as much clothing as we can, Capper said. Growing strong brings in clean, new clothing. Swabs are taken from various bodily locations, as well as unique areas such as bite marks and stains. There are envelopes designated to receive hair combings and scrapings from fingernails. We have blacklight capability, Capper said, adding that unlike portrayals on some TV crime shows, bodily fluids become visible without the use of specialized spray products. Kate Kurtz, head of the Macon County State's Attorney's Office Sex Crimes Unit, said sane nurses are beneficial for the victims because they know how to collect evidence in a sensitive manner. They are specially trained to be with them the whole time, Kurtz said. Having to go through the sexual assault is so intimidating and invasive. The examiners, who are sometimes called to testify at trials, often provide valuable evidence leading to successful investigations and convictions. They go above and beyond, Kurtz said. They know the importance of collecting evidence, such as DNA, because they know how important it is for law enforcement and prosecution. And two pictures accompany this article. The first, DMH-registered nurse Junette Kennedy, shows the contents of an Illinois State Police sexual assault evidence collection kit. And the second picture shows three smiling nurses. From left, registered nurse Kayla Doty, registered nurse Junette Kennedy, and clinical manager Elizabeth Capper are among DMH employees who are SANE certified. And from Effingham, conference addresses rural health issues. Stocking a rural medical facility with the latest technology isn't going to get any easier, but plenty is being done to make sure the rural population isn't forgotten when it comes to health care. Dr. Greg Davis said smaller practices, because of lower volume and access to fewer physicians, will have the biggest adjustment to merit-based payment incentive systems, the present and future, in how the government pays out Medicare and Medicaid claims. Davis, the Illinois Rural Community Care Organization Chief Medical Officer, was speaking at the Illinois Rural Health Association, IRHA, educational conference held at the Keller Convention Center in Effingham last week. There's going to be a significant reduction in purchasing capability, Davis said. Davis said the answer is finding more efficient ways to serve patients and to increase patient satisfaction, an important yet sometimes tricky measure that can greatly increase or reduce government payout. Quality is difficult to quantify, Davis said, and when you're talking about the ER and you're giving patient satisfaction surveys 5 minutes after they leave, a lot of it becomes, how many Vicodin would you like? To become more efficient, Davis said, doctors and patients would have to put up with something they don't often like, teamwork among medical staff. Physicians like to be the ones in control. It's what they're taught in med school. And patients like to have one provider they see, Davis said. But now there are better ways to utilize doctors and allow them to work at the top of their training and let mid-level providers take care of the rest. Davis said to keep patients happy, wait times have to be low, and time patients spend with providers needs to be high. In the current way many rural doctors' offices are run, wait times are high and time spent is low, because in an area where there's already a shortage of primary care physicians, a doctor's time is limited. Davis said even in practices that have a doctor and two or three mid-level providers, the severity of illness isn't always taken into account when appointments are assigned. Davis said having a team-based system where activities that can be performed by support staff and mid-level providers is taken out of the doctor's hands is a more efficient way to handle a practice. The patient gets more time per visit and less wait, and it frees up the doctor to take care of other things he should be doing, Davis said. Patients do identify with single providers, but they're showing us by the number going to walk-in clinics that the provider isn't as important as the access. Keith Bull of Anders CPA and Advisors said Davis's presentation was the kind of information he's looking for when he comes to health conferences. I like to hear the trends and hot topics, Bull said. There's a lot of talk about the ACO, Accountable Care Organization, models, and the new trends that come with it, and what they're going to do to the delivery of health care. The viability of rural health centers in the current healthcare climate was a major topic, but only one of many covered during the two-day conference. IRHA Executive Director Margaret Vaughn said there were 170 attendees and 33 vendors and exhibitors. Vendors spanned the medical field and included multiple telehealth services, along with advocates for specific diseases and medical associations. There was WellTrack 1, which allows organizations to risk stratify their patient population and helps administer Medicare annual wellness visits, promising to increase revenue and decrease costs. Another company, Anders CPA and Advisors out of St. Louis, helps medical facilities with traditional accounting and complying with new financial regulations. We do a lot of work with rural hospitals and clinics, Bull said. We come here and try to build some relationships and find new clients we can help with whatever their problems are. There are so many different rules and regulations healthcare providers are having to deal with. It's hard for them to keep up, so we try to fill that void. Topics for conference sessions included best practices for avoiding common deficiencies in rural health clinics, meeting the needs for older rural adults, policy and procedure, managing multiple chronic conditions, molecular diagnostics, compliance in both cost reporting and HIPAA, dental care, and healthcare cybercrimes. One session focused on the difficulty in reaching 80% by 2018, an American Cancer Society goal for colon cancer screening, and the problems in reaching that number in rural settings. With advances in testing, colon cancer rates and deaths are dropping, but there are three hotspots in the U.S. in which colon cancer rates aren't declining. One of them covers 16 southern Illinois counties, including Clay and Edwards. A panel that included the American Cancer Society Health Systems Manager Caleb Nearing, Southern Illinois Healthcare Community Benefits Manager Angie Bailey, SIU School of Medicine Clinical Coordinator Brooke Miller, and the American Cancer Society's Linda Schultz discussed how medical facilities could spread the word on cancer screening. The top reasons people don't get colon cancer screenings are affordability, lack of symptoms, no family history, perception of unpleasantness, lack of doctor recommendation, and other health issues taking priority. I can understand all those except one. The doctor didn't recommend it is a surprising one, Miller said. Miller said people should understand colonoscopies aren't the only method for colon cancer testing. Stool tests can also be effective and much cheaper and less invasive. It also saves time for the gastroenterologists because they're doing fewer colonoscopies. You don't need them to do a stool test, Miller said. Bailey said to raise colon screening rates, medical facilities should monitor the screening rates of their patients. She said they should also send reminders to patients and educate them on why it's important. Patrick Bean, a lab tech for the Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services, said he was especially interested in the colon cancer screening presentation. I wanted to get some information on FIT, fecal immunochemical test, to some of the doctors I work with, so this was a session I had targeted, Bean said. Compared to some of the old tests, I'm a firm believer that FIT is the way to go, especially with the specificity and sensitivity of the testing, and also fewer restrictions for the patients. And the briefs for today from the local page. From Decatur, alleged threats net arrest. a Decatur man was arrested on assault and weapons offenses Saturday night after knocking on the front door of a man he knows and threatening to kill him, police allege. Written reports say officers who later took the 38-year-old suspect into custody claim he appeared to be holding a rifle before ducking into his home with it. When he came out empty-handed, police say they found a live bullet on his porch and a box of ammunition. The reports say when police arrested the suspect, he turned around, put his hands behind his back, and said, "Just take me to jail." Police say the threats to kill had been made at 11:30 p.m. when the suspect, not visibly armed, had allegedly called on a 50-year-old man in the 1200 block of East Moore Street. When the man opened his front door, the suspect allegedly ripped open a storm door before making the threat. The suspect remained in the Macon County Jail on Sunday night. Mattoon. Pokemon Go event set Wednesday. Lakeland College is hosting a free Pokemon Go event from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, August 17th, on campus. There are free Wi-Fi hotspots. Come early to the inner campus to collect Pokeballs at our stops before the lures are turned on at 2 p.m. All participants will receive a 10% discount coupon from the bookstore. For more information, contact Lisa Schumard Shelton at lschumard-shelton@lakelandcollege.edu or call 217-234-5254. And from Erbil, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdish forces say they have retaken 5 villages east of the Islamic State-held city of Mosul in an operation launched early Sunday. U.S.-backed Kurdish forces, known as Peshmerga, aim to clear several more villages in one of many shaping operations that will increase pressure on the extremist group, the Kurdish Region Security Council said in a statement. Brigadier General Dadawan Khurshid Tofik described the operation outside Mosul as ongoing. Ruda, a local television network, showed footage of smoke rising from a village in the distance as armored vehicles pushed across a field. The council's statement said the area cleared is about 20 square miles. It said the U.S.-led coalition is supporting the operation with airstrikes, one of which destroyed a car bomb. And finally, Dixon Memorabilia donated. The St. Clair County Historical Society Museum has received several boxes of memorabilia of the late U.S. Senator Alan Dixon. The widow of the Democratic senator donated the materials, which include scrapbooks, handwritten notes from President Ronald Reagan, and campaign buttons. Dixon died in 2014. Dixon, known as Al the Pal, had a long political career that included time in the Illinois legislature and 10 years as treasurer and Illinois Secretary of State. He served in the U.S. Senate from 1982 to 1992. And this has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, August 15th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.